So we'll get to all that, lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, get the local view from the fine columnist for the Register Guard. Find his work in the sports section of the paper online, registerguard.com. Give ducksports.com a whirl. If you're doing the Twitter sphere, follow at Austin Meek RG. Austin, always appreciate you leading off. How are things?
Hey, Steve. Everything's good. How are you doing?
Great. You know, each year the Eugene Marathon, it just brings great stories. You know, we've had the opportunity to talk with the race director a couple times a year since day one, whether it's they got 50 states, 14 countries. So you wrote about Lisa Steves. I loved her quote when she says, "Why the hell am I doing this? It sucks and it's really hard." But you know, then we learn. So for the folks who might have missed the piece, it was terrific. What inspires her to start and 26.2 miles later finish?
Well, as somebody who's a very marginal runner, I could identify with her quote. I've never run a marathon, nor do I intend to, but I've done a couple half marathons, and I've had that very thought in the middle of it for sure. She's an interesting story because she was a person who, when she was in college at the U of O about 20 years ago, she was diagnosed with brain cancer and was told at the time that the tumor was inoperable and she had about 5 years to live. Her parents pursued some different treatments and looked into some different options and found a doctor who was willing to try a surgery, and is kind of a miracle that she came out of it as a healthy person who's had a long and healthy life since then and has become a runner, has done a few marathons. I believe this was her fifth marathon. And so for her, you know, and for everybody really who does a marathon, you got to answer that question of why am I doing this? And you got to come up with a reason. And her reason was, you know, 20 years ago they told her that she wasn't supposed to be alive right now, and she is, and she's doing well and running marathons, so it's kind of a cool story.
Another couple things she said. She called a brain tumor diagnosis a really rude interruption, and then she said the thought of death didn't cross her mind because she was pissed off. But unbelievable. I mean, she suffered a seizure around Christmas, 22 years ago, and then this is what I found also fascinating, along with what you wrote that was so uplifting. So apparently, it matters where the tumor is if you're left or right-handed. Take me through that. What doctors originally thought, I believe, here in Oregon, then what she learned in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's something I didn't know, that apparently if you're left-handed, as I am, then the right side of your brain is the dominant side. It's typically the opposite. But with her, she was kind of an unusual case because she's left-handed, but she was also left-brained. They had a special test they could do to determine which side of your brain is the dominant side. And so originally they had thought that the tumor was inoperable because it was in the right side of her brain. And the doctors thought, well, that's the dominant side. And if we go in there and cut that tumor out, then she could have severe cognitive consequences. But then they did that test. They realized, no, she's actually left-brained. So they were able to go in and do that surgery, and she was able to come out of it really with no side effects.
Unbelievable. She's remarkable. Let's get to some NBA. A week ago tonight in Portland, the Blazers were down 15. They started a rally. Then 17 seconds left, Damian Lillard isolates. He doesn't drive. He doesn't want a screen. And as the clock hits 4 or 5 seconds, it's obvious his options are shoot. And he wins it. But, you know, we've seen desperation heaves. But how, when you think about a 37-foot pull-up deliberately, how unique or just pure savage is that?
Well, I was at that game against the Rockets when he hit the shot with 0.9 seconds left.
Oh, 5 years ago?
Yes. And at the time, I could not imagine a more thrilling ending to a series than that. But I think he found a way to top it. You know, the difference was that shot against the Rockets, I wouldn't say it was a total desperation shot, but if I'm remembering correctly, they were down, and they had no other options. There was no time. It was out of a dead ball. It was a catch and shoot. They had to get a shot up. This was just a calculated dagger. You know, Damian Lillard knew exactly what he was going to do on that possession, and he knew that the Thunder, you were going to think, well, there's no way he's going to shoot this from 37 feet. And that's exactly what he did, and he buried it. The gutsiest shot I think I've ever seen anybody make. And certainly it's going to add to the legend of Damian Lillard, which is already reaching pretty epic proportions.
No, you were right. It was 98-96 when he took that shot against Houston, and they won it 99-98. Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, with that victory, obviously, then it's Denver, Portland's defense, and never really to be confused with the Pistons' bad boys. But I look at last night's game and the fact they got worked by Jokic, Jamal Murray. They got 2 points each from Harkless and for Camino, yet there they were late in the game. So I'm expecting, first of all, game one on the road to lose is never fatal. This seems like, accurate to say, a pretty even series that might end up ending like who knows.
Yeah, I think it's totally a series that could go either way, a series that could easily go seven games. I think the mission for the Blazers is just win a game in Denver somewhere along the lines. It doesn't have to be game one. It doesn't have to be game two. But I think the recipe is just steal one in Denver somewhere and then defend the home floor at the Moda Center. I do wonder if this is the series where not having Jusuf Nurkić really comes back to haunt the Blazers, because Jokic is a player that, is positioned to exploit the Blazers maybe in a way that Steven Adams couldn't for the Thunder. Jokic is such a, just a unique player, and obviously he sort of had his way with the Blazers last night. I mean, he's been a little bit inconsistent. There are nights when he just dominates like he did last night, and nights when he's not as much of a factor. So I think for the Blazers, you're just hoping you catch him on one or two of those off nights, and you find a way to piece things together the other nights. But I do think it's a very evenly matched series. I won't be surprised at all if it goes seven games. And I think a lot of the games are going to be like last night, where it's a very evenly played game until you get down to the last 2 or 3 minutes.
Nah, it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Let's get to some football. Tyreek Hill, most know the story, kicked off Oklahoma State for beating his then pregnant girlfriend. He sidestepped prosecution for allegedly beating the child. But overall, I mean, you see what Brenda Tracy is pushing for at the college level. And I get at the pros, you got to have collective bargaining. But child abuse, violence against women, is it time to implement, in essence, a kill switch? If you're guilty of one of these heinous crimes, no scholarship, no NFL, none of it, or is it even possible?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I know at the time that the Chiefs drafted Tyreek Hill, myself and a lot of other Chiefs fans, we're uncomfortable with that, knowing the backstory that he'd been kicked off the team at Oklahoma State for abusing his pregnant girlfriend, who then became his fiance, and who now is involved in this situation with their 3-year-old son. And just seeing this story unfold has been really, just really sickening, especially because Tyreek Hill had sort of been held up as the poster child for why you don't have a rule that says if you commit certain crimes, you're automatically barred from playing in the NFL. People said, look, he did this horrible thing in college. The Chiefs gave him a second chance, and look at how he's made the most of it. He became a great player, a dynamic player, one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. And everybody said, that he'd been just a model citizen in his time in the NFL. It just goes to show we don't know anything about these guys. Right. We don't know their personal lives. We don't know what their personal relationships are like, because the whole time that everybody was talking about Tyreek Hill turning his life around, it now looks like he was living in a totally dysfunctional home life relationship with his fiance and with his child. It's just really sad, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know, you know, what type of policy would address this, other than I really think that at both levels of football, college football and the NFL, they need to be doing more to educate players to make sure these things don't happen.
Ugh, it's really frustrating. So it was a good weekend for the quartet of ducks who declared for the NFL. All four got drafted. I actually thought Jelks would go first. I mean, he was an all Pac-12 performer. He seemed dominant at times. Terrific senior year. Surprised he went so late, seventh round to Dallas. And what do you make of, you know, I know it's all such a crapshoot at this point, but what do you make of his game at the next level?
You know, I think it was a little bit of a surprise. You know, the guys who you thought would get drafted were the guys who got drafted, but they got drafted in a different order than you expected.
Right.
I did kind of think Jelks and Dylan Mitchell might be the first Ducks to come off the board, and both of those guys went in the seventh round. You know, I don't think it's a huge difference when you're talking about fifth round versus seventh round. The deal was, The draft picks, the guys who were the really highly touted prospects for the Ducks, for the most part, came back. The seniors that they lost, Jelks and Hollins and Ugo Amadi, you know, are guys who potentially could carve out careers in the NFL for sure, but they were not the, you know, the high round prospects. So I think draft day went about like you thought it would. For me, the guy who was interesting was Dylan Mitchell, because he did declare early. He could have come back for his senior season. He went to the draft. He ends up going to the Vikings in the seventh round. Hey, he'll get a shot. He'll be in camp. He'll have a chance to prove himself, which he would have had to do regardless whether he was in the draft this year or next year. But for a guy who came out early, I think obviously you'd hope to be going a little bit earlier than that, and he's going to have to really go out and prove that he can stick with the Vikings.
Yeah, he doesn't lack confidence. He's already said that, to steal a page from Friday Night Lights, he sees himself as WR3 with the Vikings, their third receiver. just one last guy. I know we kind of glossed over it. I was actually kind of surprised that Hollins wasn't seen as being higher up on some boards. I mean, I look at his size, his speed, his ability to get in the backfield, make tackles down the field. And hey, you know, he got drafted in the fifth round when you consider, what, there are 130 FBS teams and, you know, there's thousands of guys. He goes in, you know, top 150 or something like that. But his skill set and ability to play special teams, how do you like his shot to succeed in the league?
I think he's got a good chance to be maybe the guy in this draft class from Oregon who has the longest NFL career, because he fits what teams are looking for at that position. He's big, he's athletic, he's versatile. NFL teams want guys his size who can rush the passer. He's kind of the prototype now in the NFL. So I do think he has a good chance to stick around a while, and you know, he'll play on special teams. You know, you can plug him in a couple different spots. I really liked his game as a senior. He's one of those guys, you know, he's a testament to college football being a developmental sport, because didn't hear a ton about him early in his career, but he just kept getting a little bit better. Every year you saw him, he got a little bit better, and he had a really good senior year, and I think he can keep getting better. You know, I don't think that he's maxed out his potential. So if he continues to improve, I could see him being a guy who has a 10-year NFL career.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does. He is Austin Meek, columnist extraordinaire of the Register Guard, on Twitter at Austin Meek RG. I was going to bring up the Royals, but I saw a game there the other day. It's really depressing. They have like 87 people at the games already. 2015 seems like forever ago, doesn't it?
No. Well, thanks for not spoiling my week. You never like to end the segment on a downer, and talking about the Royals right now certainly would have done that.
I am the worst host ever. That was a terrible finish. I promise I'll make it up to you next Tuesday. Thanks a lot, Austin. Right. Take it easy.